Chapter 4. Most of the team is very hungover the next morning, not to mention exhausted. But it doesn't matter because Aria pitches her first perfect game ever, sending strike after strike into Marcella's glove. Their game is over long before the boys' game, and the team divides, some heading back to the hotel for more sleep, some heading over to the field next over to cheer on the boys. Aria does neither. She sits in the locker room, long after everyone else has gone, and ices her shoulder, because it stings to move it. It's done that before, after she's pitched a long time, but never quite like this. "You need to keep watching your elbow." She hadn't heard Sirio come in, but there he is, standing over her and looking not so much concerned as amused. "Yeah, I remembered that when it started hurting," she sighs, and she shifts over on the bench, making room for him. He makes a grunting noise as his butt connects with the wood, and he leans back against the wall. "You will remember sooner next time," he replies easily. "You pitched well today. How do you feel?" Her heart swells. Sirio is sparse with his praise. Encouragement is constant, but praise, true praise, is rare, and he only gives it where it's due. Him saying that she pitched well makes her feel truly proud of herself for the first time since she came back into the locker room. "Good. I feel really good," she replies. And as she says it, she feels a smile cross her face. "That is good. It is good to feel good about one's victories. What have you learned from it?" She thought for a moment, chewing her lip. I will watch my elbow next time," she says, and he laughs. "A valiant start. What else?" But she doesn't know what he's getting at. Sometimes she sees it, sometimes she doesn't, and right now, she can't, for the life of her, follow. "How did the rest of the team play?" he asks lightly. Marcella had hit twice, Obella had stolen third, Alisane had scored the one run they'd needed to win. But it had not been a good game. "Not so well," she says. "Not so well at all." "Did you feel the weight of that while you pitched?" Sirio asks. "Yeah, I did. I couldn't let them down." "In most games, do you worry about letting them down?" Now she saw it, what he was getting at. "No, I don't. But in most games, I'm competitive, too. I'm playing to win." "Playing to win and playing to cover are different things," he says. "For some, it manifests the opposite of the way it does for you. You pitched the best game I've seen you pitch because you knew you couldn't fail them. So you didn't. So next time..." His voice trails away and he looks at her with raised eyebrows. "So next time, keep playing defense," she suggests. "Yes. As they say, the best defense is a good offense. Think of your throws as a shield. Without them, you won't have to worry that Elia's head is splitting open because the ball won't make it to her, or that Cynthia is running more slowly than usual because she still feels sluggish from last night." He takes the ice pack from her shoulder. "Alternate it with warmth. Don't leave it there all day. Besides," he eyes the bag, which is now dripping with cold water, "this one is nearly useless now anyway." She sits with Ned on the bus ride out to Casterly Rock the next day, ignoring Gendry completely. He seems in a better mood today. Ned says he hit 2 home runs yesterday, and everyone pretty much agreed that he was responsible for the sound thrashing that the baseball team had given Lannis U. Aria shrugs and adjusts her baseball cap when Ned tells her, and says that that's good for him, and wishes that it were Gendry telling her. With that sideways smile that was more of a quirk of the lips than anything else that he did when he was trying not to sound too pleased with himself, because she'd smack him. She changes the subject soon thereafter, getting into a debate about whether or not the Spears should trade away Arthur Dayne, Ned's uncle, because he's getting old and his knees weren't what they once were. But he was an icon of the team. Ned accuses her of just wanting him to go to Winterfell, and she grins because she can't even deny it. She watches Rosamund pitch a good first half, and when she begins to flag, they swap in Weasel, and Arya grins because she sees the little freshman nervously trying to incorporate the pointers that Arya had given her, and her heart swells with pride as she strikes out three batters in a row and comes grinning off the field to sit by Arya. "Oh, like hells I am," snaps Puddingfoot, and Lyanna bursts out laughing. "Oh, but you are, and if you don't, you're gonna make me?" He crosses his arms at her, and she laughs again. "Yeah, I am. You and what army? I don't need an army. I can do what I like." The argument evaporates when Barrett clears his throat and looks at them over the tops of his glasses. "We are in a public car, and I know we are the only ones in it. However, some of us were hoping for some peace and quiet," he says. Both mumble their apologies and begin hissing at each other, and Arya can't hear them anymore. There's something lulling about trains, something peaceful and beautiful as they speed their way back along the Red Fork line towards Harrenhal. She loves watching the farms and pastures they pass, the windmills, the odd town full of lovely little red-roofed houses, all while the gentle thrumming of the train soothes her, makes her drowsy. She's half asleep, hoping that she'll slip back into that dream she'd had on her way out, maybe picking right up where she'd left off when Gendry slides into the seat next to her. She blinks drowsily at him. "You over it then?" she asks. "Nearly," he says. "Sorry." He doesn't elaborate, though. "Yeah, well, it'd be nice if you didn't take out your anger problems on me. That's what the baseballs are for." That makes him smile wryly. "Yeah, I know. That's why I played well this weekend." Then it's like her words fully hit him. "And I don't have anger problems." That makes her grin. "Of course not," she says, patting his arm consolingly. And he glares at her. But it's a good glare. The kind of glare he gives her when she makes fun of how Duckworth can't pitch for shit, and how Targaryen really needs to spend more time at batting practice. "Sometimes I wonder why I bother with you," he mutters, and she laughs. "Because I'm charming and delightful, obviously. A right pain in my ass, more like." "But you like it," she grins. "Is that something you like? Something I should tell your soulmate to try?" He blushes furiously, and Arya lets out a shriek of laughter that earns her a glare from Beric, so she stuffs her fist into her mouth to stifle the sound. When she drifts off to sleep, her head is on Gendry's shoulder, and it takes her a moment to realize she's dreaming when he twists against her and begins sucking on her neck, because she refuses to be worse than Elia and Lyanna. But the car of the train is empty, so what does it matter? No one will notice that she's sliding her hand down to cup his cock. She stumbles from the train, even more confused now than she had been before, hardly able to look Gendry in the face, because he'd made her come three times in her dreams, and she wasn't entirely sure that some of that hadn't translated to her coming in her sleep, because she's never really quite felt this breathless in this way before. No one looks at her oddly. There's no whispering, no anything, no teasing remark from either team as she climbs onto the bus from the train station back to the university, and Gendry sits next to her again. Is she imagining it, or are his cheeks a bit flushed? Does he seem a little pleased with himself? He's probably just well rested. Part of her wants to go back to sleep again, to sink into her dreams and hope that her soulmate is sleeping too, so that she can play softball or baseball with him, or even just lie down on the field and stare at the stars. But she's far too keyed up. She throws her bag into a corner by her bed when she gets back to her room, and she's calling John. He picks up on the third ring.
"Hey, you made the news," he says, and she hears a grin in his voice.
"What?" she says.
"Yeah, your shutout against Lannisport made the news. It was the local news, mind, but they're starting to think you all might upset Winterfell in a few weeks. Nice no-hitter, by the way."
"They think we might upset Winterfell?" It's the sort of news that blows everything out of her mind just for a minute. Because Winterfell, they weren't counting on beating Winterfell. White Harbor, yeah, but Winterfell? They hadn't thought it was possible. But if the newscasters are nervous,
how much of that might be wishful thinking on the part of Castle Black? She asks hesitantly.
"Well, it was the Winter Network, so I don't think it's wishful thinking."
Arya's heart beats wildly in her chest.
"They think we might win?"
"Yep. The boys here have a pool going on, by the way. I bet on you out of principle, so don't you let me down, okay?"
"Well, now I have to win," she says excitedly. "Wouldn't want you to lose the two dragons you have."
"I have more than two dragons," John says dryly.
"You keep telling yourself that when Rob next beats you at poker."
"Rob can't beat me at poker. Rob's a liar and a sneak."
John says it perfectly cheerfully, and Arya can tell he's smiling. Gods, she wants to see him smile. Sometimes she looks in a mirror and smiles, and is reminded of John so much it almost hurts. A part of her, a bitter part, tells her that she wishes that any of her siblings but Sansa was here with her. She'd been here on her own for a few years, but then Sansa had transferred over from the Eyrie to be with Ned, after transferring there to get away from Joffrey. And she knows she shouldn't look a gift horse, or gift sibling, she supposes, in the mouth. But it's Sansa. Why couldn't she have had Jon or Bran?
"What's going on your end?" she asks him. And he launches into a ridiculous story about Sam getting lost up beyond, and how they had to take out snowmobiles to find him, and had ended up lost themselves, and Gren and Pip had to huddle for warmth.
"At least I had Ghost," John says.
"Sam was all right?" Arya asks.
"Yeah, he was fine. And get this, he stumbled on his soulmate. She's really sweet and gentle and perfect for him in so many ways."
Arya doesn't say anything, because at the mention of soulmates, she remembers why she's calling, and wonders if she can even bring it up now. She's so relaxed now, and John's sounding happy for the first time in ages, and she wouldn't want to bring down the conversation, but...
"Arya?"
"Yeah?"
"What's wrong with your soulmate?"
"How could you tell?" she sighs, flipping over on her bed and burying her face in her pillow.
"Well, I mentioned a soulmate and you went quiet, and I've been in this family long enough to know that that usually indicates soulmate troubles. Hit me. I just had a very long conversation with Bran."
"How's Bran?"
"He's managing. Quit deflecting and cough up."
Arya rolls her eyes, takes a deep breath, and sighs.
"So, I keep having sex dreams about my best friend, and I don't know what to do about it. I thought it would stop, but it hasn't, and they're only getting more intense."
John's silent for a moment. Then he bursts out laughing.
"So, what are you worried about then? Sex dreams happen."
"Yeah, but not this often. Not with me."
"Call it your sexual awakening, then. Are you worried your soulmate will be upset?"
"He's not, I told him."
"Well, that's good of him. What's the issue?"
"He's my friend, John. What would you do if you had sex dreams about, I don't know, Sam?"
John snorts. "Well, for one, I'd be very confused because I've never once in my life been attracted to a man before. But I don't know. At this point, I'd just be happy to dream about anyone that's not missing Ygritte."
That shuts her up, and shuts her up good, which was evidently John's intent, because he makes a sound at the back of his throat and says, Look, so you haven't had sex dreams before, and that's weirding you out. That's fine. But if your soulmate doesn't mind, then it's okay, and you shouldn't feel bad. Sex things shouldn't ever make you feel bad. Yeah, but what about Gendry? It's Gendry? John laughs again. Well, I suppose that makes sense. He's quite fit to hear the lasses. Oh, shut up! Sorry. Look, what he doesn't know won't kill him. And with sex dreams, it's often better that the other party doesn't know about it.
He'd probably get a big head over it, she mutters.
Wouldn't surprise me. Most guys would. She can hear the shrug in John's voice. But look, you're feeling guilty, right? Why are you feeling guilty? Do you feel like you should be having sex with your soulmate or something instead? She hears the way his voice breaks, but doesn't comment on it. She never does. None of them do when he remembers Ygritte.
I don't know. It feels like it's, I don't know, it's intimate, all right?
Sexual intimacy isn't the only kind of intimacy. You should know that. Between Bran and Sansa, you should really know that. So learn about him. Keep talking to him. Keep pushing him to know more about you. It'll help. And if you do it right, maybe you'll stop your sex dreams with Gendry. Unless, of course, you want to keep them, under which circumstances I'm sure your brain'll keep sending them your way.
Thanks, she mumbles.
I mean it, John says quickly. I'm not taking the piss or...
No, I know you do. I mean it too.
She takes a deep breath and closes her eyes and tries to remember what the field in her dreams looks like. But she can only think of Gendry as he'd eased into her. Into her. Fuck, she'd forgotten that. How had she forgotten that? Fuck. In the dream, on the train.
Other kinds of intimacy.
Right. If it's possible, she sighs with relief when she fades into the dream, standing in the middle of the baseball diamond. He's already there, wearing a dragon's t-shirt, and when she looks down, she sees she's wearing the white and gray pinstripe, direwolves jersey she'd stolen off John when he'd grown out of it. Ready to play? He asks her, hefting his bat over his shoulder, and she grins at him. Always. And she hurls the ball his way. He swings and... misses? Did I get one past you?
No, I let it by.
I got one past you! She's practically cackling now. It's never happened before. I'm on fire!
I sincerely hope not, because there's no water here to put you out with, and...
Oh, shut up! She sticks her tongue out at him, and he grins at her. Quit being a whiny fucker and acknowledge that I got one past you.
You kiss your mother with that mouth?
He laughs. And that's when she remembers. She hadn't thought anything of it at the time. It had been so buried under something else. Something stupid in comparison. But John's words about intimacy are still on her mind. And she remembers just how smoothly he had deflected when she asked.
What is it?
You never answered. When I asked you what your mother was like, she says cautiously. And gods, it's the worst not being able to see his face. Not being able to tell if she crossed a line or if he was rolling his eyes at her for asking a stupid question. She can tell something's up because he lets the bat fall from his hands and he waves her over, walking towards the dugout and sitting down on the bench. She puts the ball down on the mound and follows him, feeling as though her dream makes the distance between the mound and the dugout a little smaller.
Yeah, my mom's dead, he says without preamble, when she's sitting next to him. She died a few years ago, before I started college.
I'm so, so sorry, Arya whispers, taking his hand and squeezing it. His hand is very big, and there are calluses on it from the baseball bat. She wonders if he wears batting gloves when he plays.
He should.
Thanks, he says shortly. I don't talk about it much. There's not much to say about it. She was your mom, Arya says before she can stop herself.
then winces and looks up at him sheepishly. I mean, there doesn't have to be a lot to say about it. It runs deep, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose.
What was she like then? Arya asks.
She had a temper and drank a fair amount, which is part of why I don't drink. She had shit taste in boyfriends, even after my dad. They weren't so great. I think part of why I started playing baseball as opposed to just watching was so I could keep a bat in my room in case things got ugly and no one would second guess it.
Huh. He lets out a laugh, as though trying to lighten that statement, and Arya's riveted. They were awful, and she'd cry herself to sleep and drink when she left. I think her soulmate died or something. She never talked about him at all.
Yeah, it wasn't ideal growing up, all right. And I'm glad you didn't have that, because it fucking sucks. A lot. A hell of a lot.
She turns to face him and looks hard into that scratched out spot on his head and wills herself to see him, but she can't. So she just wraps her arms around him as tight as she can, and she hears him make a surprised sound, even as he raises his arms to encircle her. He's warm and smells good, and her stomach lurches because he uses the same pine deodorant as Gendry does, and gods, why can't they just be more different? Why does this all have to be so intertwined, so complicated? She holds him like that for a long moment, his arms around her, her breathing in the familiar scent of him, relishing the warmth of his body against hers, and how good it feels to just hold someone close. She doesn't expect him to keep going.
She didn't want me, I don't think.
Yeah, she definitely didn't. So, I don't know. Thanks.
Thanks for what?
She asks incredulously.
For wanting me.
Her heart breaks a little, and she reaches up and touches his cheek, and her hand goes blurry as it approaches his skin. He twists his face towards her hand and kisses her palm.
Always, she whispers to him, then presses her forehead to his chest.
Always. Every night that week is a baseball dream. Every single one. Sometimes they're laughing and joking about how the dragons are still on a losing streak. Sometimes they're quiet, and the only sound is the smack of the ball against his bat. But every morning, Arya wakes up and she feels warm inside. Perfect, unconfused.